Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Total Energy Services, Inc. second quarter 2019 results conference call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode, and the conference has been recorded. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To join the question queue, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. Should you need assistance during the conference call, you may signal an operator by pressing star and zero. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Daniel Halyk. Please go ahead, Mr. Halyk.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome to our second quarter conference call. Present with me is Yulia Gorbach, Total's VP Finance and CFO. We will review with you Total's financial and operating highlights for the 3 months ended June 30th, 2019, then provide an outlook for our business and open up the phone lines for any questions. Yulia, please proceed.
Thank you, Dan. During the conference call, information may be provided containing forward-looking information concerning Total's projected operating results, anticipated capital expenditure trends, and projected drilling activity in the oil and gas industry. Actual events or results may differ materially from those reflected in Total's forward-looking statements due to a number of risks, uncertainties, and other factors affecting Total's business and the oil and gas service industry in general. These risks, uncertainties, and other factors are described under the heading Risk Factors and elsewhere in Total's most recently filed annual information form and other documents filed with Canadian provincial authorities that are available to the public at www.sira.com. Our discussions during this conference call are qualified with reference to the notes to the financial highlights contained in the news release issued yesterday. Unless otherwise indicated, all financial information in this conference call is presented in Canadian dollars. Total Energy's financial results for the 3 months ending June 30, 2019 reflect continued challenging industry conditions in Canada. Prolonged wet weather conditions throughout much of Western Canada extended the usual seasonal decline in activity during spring breakup, which was partially offset by relatively stable industry conditions in the United States and Australia. By business segment, compression and process services contributed 62% of 2019 second quarter consolidated revenues, contract drilling services 16%, well servicing 14%, and rentals and transportation services 7%. Year-to-date, CPS segment contributed 58% of consolidated revenues, contract drilling 18%, well servicing 16%, and RTS 8%. Geographically, 51% of second quarter revenue was generated in the United States, 33% in Canada, and 16% in Australia. Year-to-date, 42% of revenues came from the United States, 38% from Canada, and 20% from Australia. Within our contract drilling segment, a significant year-over-year decline in Canadian drilling activity resulted in lower second quarter revenues and increased operating loss compared to Q2 of 2018. Despite a 29% decline in the second quarter operating days in the United States compared to 2018, improved day rates and increased operating efficiencies resulted in continued bottom line improvement for our U.S. drilling operations. While utilization of Australia remained stable, revenue per operating day was lower in Q2 2019 as compared to Q2 2018 due to a combination of lower average day rates and lower camp and other ancillary revenue. This, combined with a weakening of the Australian dollar relative to the Canadian dollar over the past year, contributed to a decline in revenue and operating earnings compared to Q2 2018. For the first half of 2019, 35% of contract drilling revenue came from Canada, 33% from Australia, and 32% from the United States. The substantial year-over-year decline in Canadian industry activity also contributed to a 13% decline in second quarter Canadian revenue for our rentals and transportation services segment. This decline was more than offset by a 65% increase in U.S. RTS revenue as we continue to relocate equipment to that market. As such, second quarter segment revenue increased 5% compared to the prior year comparable period. Revenue per utilized rental piece in RTS increased 57% from Q2 2018 due to the mix of equipment operating as well as high realized pricing on equipment relocated from Canada to the United States. Year to date, 37% of RTS segment revenue was generated in the United States compared to 19% for the first half of 2018. Improved pricing in the U.S. with a larger U.S. fleet together with cost management efforts in Canada resulted in improved quality quarterly bottom line performance for the RTS segment compared to the prior year, even after incurring $0.4 million of equipment relocation expenses in the second quarter of 2019. Within our compression and process services segment, second quarter revenue for 2019 was $132.9 million, a 26% increase compared to the second quarter of 2018. Despite higher revenue, segment operating earnings decreased due to higher year-over-year overhead costs following the expansion of fabrication capacity in late 2018, as well as the completion of lower margin fabrication projects during the quarter. This segment exited the second quarter of 2019 with a fabrication sales backlog of $77.2 million, an $82.6 million decrease from March 31, 2019. During the second quarter, the CPS segment received an Alberta Court of Queen's Bench judgment for $11.5 million in respect of an order cancelled in 2015 without payment of contractual termination fees. While the judgment has been appealed, we are in the process of registering it in the United States in order to proceed with collection. Revenue arising from this judgment will be recorded when received. Second quarter revenue for our well servicing segment was $30.5 million, a 14% decrease from Q2 2018. A 28% year-over-year decrease in Canadian service hours, due in part to extended wet weather conditions, was the primary factor contributed to revenue decrease. Total service hours for the second quarter were 31,109, of which 54% were in Australia, 30% in Canada, and 16% in the United States. This compares to 36,472 service hours during the second quarter of 2018, of which 50% were in Australia, 36% in Canada, and 14% in the United States. Consolidated gross margin for the second quarter of 2019 was $31.8 million, or 15% of revenue, as compared to $35.8 million, or 18.5% of revenue in the second quarter of 2018. Consolidated cash flow before changes in non-cash working capital items was $22.4 million, for the second quarter of 2019, consistent with the $22.5 million of cash flow generated in the second quarter of 2018. Cash provided by operating activities for the first half of 2019 after changes in working capital items was $54.3 million. Consolidated EBITDA for the first quarter of 2019 was $17.5 million, a $5.7 million decrease from the $23.2 million of EBITDA realized in Q2 2018. $3.4 million of such decrease arises from the translation of foreign currency intercompany working capital balances that are non-cash in nature. The appreciation of the Canadian dollar relative to the U.S. dollar over the past year gave rise to this unrealized loss on currency translation. Total Energy remains profitable during the second quarter, with a net income attributable to shareholders of $3.4 million, or 7 cents per share on a diluted basis, as compared to $3.8 million, or 8 cents per share on a diluted basis in the second quarter of 2018. Total Energy's financial condition remains strong, with $74.3 million of positive working capital, including $33.9 million of cash at June 30, 2019. $41.9 million of mortgage debt was reclassified as current during the second quarter. We expect to renew such mortgage debt when it matures in April of 2020. During the second quarter of 2019, Total Energy paid $2.7 million of dividends and repurchased $2.5 million of common shares. Total bank debt net of cash was $235.4 million at June 30, 2019, a $19.7 million reduction from December 31, 2018. In addition to the regular monthly principal payments on $57.2 million of mortgage debt, during the first half of 2019, Total Energy voluntarily paid $15 million of bank debt assumed with acquisition of Savannah. At June 30, 2019, $212 million was drawn on $295 million of available revolving bank credit facilities. Our bank covenants consist of maximum senior debt to trailing 12-month bank-defined EBITDA of 3 times and a minimum bank-defined EBITDA to interest expense of 3 times. At June 30, 2019, company senior bank to bank defined EBITDA ratio was 1.79 and the bank interest coverage ratio was 6.91 times.
Thank you, Yulia. With challenging and uncertain industry conditions, we remain focused on the efficient and sustainable operation of our various business segments, preservation of our balance sheet strength, and prudent stewardship of our owners' capital. While we continue to strategically invest in the growth and maintenance of our equipment fleet, we are able to generate significant free cash flow even when operating at historically low utilization rates. This is evidenced by our net capital investment in property, plant, and equipment relative to cash flow generated. The success of our strategy to geographically diversify our revenue base was evident during the second quarter, with two-thirds of our revenue coming from outside of Canada, including 51% from the United States. Compare this to 2015, when only 3.4% of our annual revenue was derived from outside of Canada. We are encouraged with the steady progress being made in our U.S. drilling business. Following the acquisition of Savannah in mid-2017, we set out to renegotiate or terminate unprofitable legacy contracts as they came due, consolidate operations geographically, and improve the efficiency of our operations. This strategy has seen our U.S. drilling business reduce its operating loss by almost 50% from the second quarter of 2017 to the second quarter of 2019, despite a 44% decline in spud to release days and a corresponding 43% decline in quarterly revenue. With most legacy contracts behind us, and with our operations now functioning much more efficiently, we are optimistic as to the future prospects for this business despite the recent pullback in U.S. drilling activity. We are also pleased with the steady progress being made by our U.S. rentals and transportation business. We are experiencing strong demand for quality equipment and service as we continue to gain market share in a relatively flat market. Historical demand for our compression and process equipment has generally followed the North American onshore drilling rig count. An exception has been strong demand arising from the North American energy infrastructure build, particularly in the United States, which has insulated the CPS segment from a falling rig count over the past few quarters. With the significant decline in oil prices in late 2018, during the first quarter of 2019, we began to see a decline in the conversion of quotes into firm orders relative to historical experience. This continued in the second quarter. Australian and other international orders for compression tend to be lumpier than North America. While there are significant North American and international energy infrastructure projects in front of us, and quoting activity remains strong, we are closely monitoring industry conditions to ensure our fabrication capacity and resulting cost structure and overhead absorption are in line with anticipated industry conditions. That said, I would note that the $82.6 million decline in the CPS fabrication sales backlog from Q1 to Q2 represents 62% of the $132.9 million of revenue generated in the second quarter. In other words, the diversity of our revenue streams within the CPS segment saw almost 40% of our second quarter revenue being generated by other activities such as parts and service and compression rentals that did not grind down our fabrication sales backlog. Market conditions in the energy industry have been uncertain and volatile for some time now, particularly in Canada, where our industry has faced unique and significant political and regulatory barriers to putting people and equipment back to work. While we are encouraged by recent regulatory and policy changes in Alberta, the implementation of Bills C-48 and C-69 by the federal government is very disappointing. These laws are deeply discriminatory towards domestic oil producers relative to foreign imported oil and will continue to discourage investment in Canadian resource development. A definite consequence of these laws will be less jobs and less tax and royalty revenues across Canada as investment continues to flow to other energy-producing nations that in most cases do not operate to the same operational, environmental and social standards that the Canadian industry operates at and that is expected by Canadians. I am grateful to our employees and their families for their continued perseverance and commitment to operating at the highest standards despite the headwinds that our industry has faced over the past few years. Like them, I am proud of our industry and of how we have managed to navigate through these challenging times. I am confident that we will emerge a stronger company and that our owners will be rewarded for their patience and support. I would now like to open the phone lines up for any questions.
We will now begin the question and answer session. To join the question queue, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing any keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. We will pause for a moment as callers join the queue. The first question comes from John Berzinski with Canaccord Genuity Group. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Morning, everyone.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Just in terms of the compression backlog, just wondering if you would be willing to give us an indication of where that backlog might sit today relative to the end of the second quarter.
We're not, John, just like we've never done in 22 years.
Fair enough.
You know, I think, like I said, it's your international projects tend to be lumpy. And, domestically, you're seeing a pretty consistent North American experience with, producers sitting on their wallets a little bit. You know, that said, overall gas volumes in North America continue to rise, particularly in the U.S. You know, we're seeing a build-out of oil pipelines in the U.S. that will help relieve some bottlenecks, particularly in, jurisdictions that have some pretty high collateral gas production. And, we're also looking, hopefully, at some LNG development in Canada and North America. So, you know, these things are lumpy. Definitely, we've seen a pullback in conversion from quotes to orders. I think that's pretty consistent across the board. But, you know, as I noted, John, almost 40% of quarterly revenue didn't grind the backlog. So, there is a base of ongoing recurring revenue within that business. But we're watching it very, very closely, and, we'll we'll stick handle through this and adjust our cost structure as best we can to reflect what we think our productive capacity needs to be going forward.
Got it. Okay. And then just related to that, and I think you touched on it, looks like your active rental fleet did tick up nicely in compression sequentially in Q2. Is that kind of a trend you're seeing maybe concurrent with the fabrication backlog coming down? And maybe a little color there would be helpful.
Well, certainly, it's logical to expect that particularly producers will look to utilize someone else's balance sheet. And we're happy to do that, provided the risk reward is satisfactory. But we have definitely seen a pretty steady uptick in our current compression rental fleet, and that's been a fairly steady move over the past couple of years. And again, capital is pretty scarce in the energy business, and we're happy to put our balance sheet to work going forward if it makes sense.
Got it. Thanks. And then just shifting gears to RTS, obviously a nice margin improvement there in Q2. Is the nature of your fleet in the U.S. a little different than in Canada? Just kind of curious of how business mix differs now that you're moving equipment southward.
No. It's pretty much the same fleet. The only difference is we get paid a lot more and there's more work.
Sad but true. That's all for me. Thanks for the color. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, John.
The next question comes from Patrick Tang with AltaCorp Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. Just want to start by asking, we see that CPS margins took a bit of a step back in the quarter. Do you expect this to normalize over the near term, or was the margin compression mostly a function of the lower margin, more commoditized work completed during Q2, or were there other factors that contributed?
I think there's a mix of the projects that were completed through the quarter as well. Obviously, you have overhead absorption issues as you're throttling back a little bit. We did expand in Q4. We basically displaced a smaller lease facility with a larger. The absolute rent was actually lower on the building. It's a sub-rent situation, but obviously bigger space, so you've got more utilities and that sort of thing, as well as people. So we're going to adjust our productive capacity as required within reason and ultimately bring your overheads as best you can in line with your throughput on the fabrication side. But definitely, overhead absorption becomes an issue when you're running at lower levels of utilization.
Great, thanks. Just one more question for me. Could you give us an update on what your bookings look like for each of the geographical segments? Like, is the bid pipeline pretty strong in terms of value and quality? In other words, are there a number of projects that you guys think you can win a bid for, and are these projects of the higher type margin work that would imply stronger returns?
So, first of all, I'm not going to give any color on specific geographies for competitive reasons, obviously. But we've demonstrated over the past 2 years as we've ramped up our U.S. presence and certainly have been very competitive in the Australian market that we can compete in all those markets. And we expect to get our fair share of activity in those markets. So we're right in the middle of everything there. And I would say that nothing that we see within our existing pipeline or what we see our competitors getting is much of a surprise. It's a fairly small industry. We're pretty aware of what's going on.
Alrighty, that's it for me. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, if you have a question, please press star then one. The next question comes from John Morrison with CIBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Morning, all.
Morning, John.
Dan, Australia continues to be a really good market for you guys. As you look to what demand should be in the coming period, do you believe that there's going to be any need for you to actually add assets at this point to that market?
I would expect that will be a jurisdiction where we do deploy additional capital, John.
Within that market. Obviously, the strength that you're seeing across your business can be extended across a lot of other ancillary service lines, of which a decent amount would be owned by smaller contractors. Given that backdrop, do you have any interest in entering other service lines and expanding your service offering? And I just ask that from the perspective that obviously you're a leader in that market, you've got a well-established platform, and you have a long history of improving the profitability of smaller companies that you acquire. So is that a market where consolidation opportunities would make more sense than organic CapEx at this point?
So within the existing operations, what we saw year over year, we actually had a fairly significant geographic movement with some of our rigs that displaced the need for camps. And so you're seeing a little bit of a revenue per operating day reduction on the drilling side. You know, the flip side is you don't have the costs associated with that. We were pretty successful in monetizing our assets that were required to support that business. The flip side is we are seeing opportunities to displace third-party equipment utilized in our drilling and well servicing processes with our own equipment. You know, we're always take a pragmatic view that we can't be everything to everyone, and if we're going to do something, we want to do it well operationally, as well as ensure that it gets appropriate returns. But there's definitely opportunities in that front to be a little more turnkey. As well, I think the opportunity to grow our business there is pretty good. You know, as you noted, we're operating at pretty high utilization levels. You know, we see the market as being relatively stable. We're also, you know, frankly, got a very good reputation over there. I would see new builds probably being a little more compelling than acquisitions, just given the general quality of the asset base over there. And the other thing is, you know, you're working in pretty remote areas where you don't have the support that you would, you know, we take for granted in North America, even in some of our remote northern locations. And so when you're, you know, 600 miles from your nearest major center, you need to have a pretty robust modern fleet that is not going to, you know, require a lot of servicing from far away. So, you know, we're biased towards new builds, but, you know, there from time to time we have looked at acquisition opportunities, but asset quality will be a key consideration in that regard.
And just when you say new builds, are you specifically referring to rigs, whether it be drilling or workover, or what about some of the ancillary stuff that would surround a rig that
is
not core today? Okay.
Everything.
Switching
but
gears.
But it's also pretty expensive to build. You pretty much, you know, most of your major equipment, your rigs, service rigs, you know, are brought from North America.
Yeah, given the fabrication capabilities, it's still cheaper to build it here, ship over, and then just make sure that you meet specifications of that market.
Yeah, it's both cost and access to, you know, capable fabricators and engineering.
Dan, the price dislocation in equity values for a large number of your peers is obviously immense, even despite the fact that we all know that we're in a very challenging market. As such, can you just give a high-level thought on how you think about consolidation opportunities right now, given that you tend to be very counter-cyclical in nature, and this is a market where you would tend to deploy more capital?
You know, we've been very busy on that front. We, you know, for every one we do, we probably look at 50, some bigger, some smaller. I think a couple points, John, on that. You know, we've seen the benefits of consolidation directly with the Savannah acquisition. That's been a good deal, I believe, for both sides. You know, certainly, you know, we've been operating in a pretty tough environment for the drilling side, you know, since that acquisition. But, you know, we've, for the most part, extracted pretty good bottom line performance at very low utilization. And, you know, another point that I made in our call was our ability to generate free cash flow relative to the capital we're investing in the maintenance and growth of the fleet. And it's, you know, I would encourage our owners and analysts to look at our capital relative to our cash flow. And, you know, that's half the game. If you're spending, you know, 2 times your cash flow on maintaining and growing your cash flow, you know, that's a bit of a treadmill. We're the exact opposite of that. I think in Q2 it was less than 20% on maintenance and growth, and obviously the growth part will benefit us going forward. So, you know, again, back to your question, we're very active in looking at consolidation. I believe this industry needs to consolidate more, and you know, we're going to be part of that where it makes sense for our owners. And obviously our cost to equity is a lot higher than it was a couple of years ago, which, you know, the message that sends to us is we've got to be remain disciplined. And so we will do that, but if it makes sense, we can do that. You know, we do have the support of our bankers. We've got the digestion of Savannah behind us. I feel very good about it. And again, you're seeing in the U.S. drilling where we've been focused lately, and finally all the legacy contracts are coming off. You know, we're going to really show what we can do, you know, with a smaller, shallower fleet there. And, you know, like I said, we need more mass down there. And, you know, in Canada, you know, it's all about stripping costs and in some cases relocating assets, you know, outside of Canada. But there'll be more consolidation, and we hope to be part of it.
Just as a follow-on to that, you have a long history of being prudent with your equity, but in this type of environment, do you view everything to be relative, in that if a seller solely wants equity and there's an accretive deal to be done, you would ultimately possibly issue stock for them, despite the fact that it doesn't feel good to do it below book value or where you would traditionally issue it in the past?
You know, it's all relative. It's how do you carve the pie up? So, in fact, now is a great time to do acquisitions, you know, but it's got to make sense to us. You know, Savannah, we did issue, it was the largest equity issue we ever did. And, you know, it was certainly at a lower point in the cycle, but I think it's worked for both sides. And, again, you know, if we could do a similar transaction going forward that made sense, you know, we would certainly be open to it. But again, you know, the market's telling us clearly that we need to be diligent, and, you know, it's got to work for us. Otherwise, you know, we wouldn't do it. But we're not going to do anything crazy, John, but we're very open and flexible, and it's got to work for both sides as well. We get that.
Just the last one for me, given some of the slowing in bookings that you're seeing, and obviously your peers have been reporting over Q2, do you believe that we get into an environment where pricing becomes much more competitive than it has been in the last 12 months, or it just leads to perhaps lower throughput but pricing remains fairly stable?
You know, the sector has never really had excessive returns for the past while. And, you know, how do I know that? You look at the competitive landscape, it hasn't really changed. In fact, you know, you've seen consolidation within the smaller private side, particularly in Canada. And you've also seen, you know, in the U.S. on the master limited partnership side, quite a few financial distress situations there, you know, situations where risk was being underpriced. So when you don't have excess returns, you don't get excessive overcapitalization. And so I think the market's reasonably balanced, and, you know, that allows you to adapt and adjust a lot more. And also there's still a lot of projects in front of us, North American and globally. And so, you know, all it takes is one order to change your backlog pretty quickly. So, I think you're probably going to see a pretty disciplined, stable industry there. You know, unlike the rigs and the rentals where you've had massive overcapitalization, and it's been truly a pretty brutal right-sizing. But, you know, it's ongoing, and ultimately we'll come out of that in a situation where hopefully we do realize excess returns for a month or two.
Appreciate the color. I'll turn it back.
Thanks.
This concludes the question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Danihalik for any closing remarks.
Thank you. We appreciate your participation in our conference call and look forward to speaking with you after we release our third quarter. Thanks and have a good weekend.
This concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating and have a pleasant day.